And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, hey, I'm going to move to number two in the Triple Dipper. In Harm's Way is what I'm calling this. And I named it that because it's so important that we remember that it's not just in a time of declared war that we have troops in harm's way. Not at all. There are contingency operations. There are deployments as a show of force. There are things going on in long regions with long instability, and that's ongoing right now. We have troops in harm's way right now. And as I prepared for this segment, even I, with still having family in the military, still having friends that are very much involved in both defense contracting and in the defense industry and in the actual world of the DOD, I still found myself going, "Oh wow, I didn't know that one." So here's the thing. As we are looking at our U.S. military, which, by the way, I have a fondness for the U.S. I 30 years of service. I have no regrets. I guess the only regret I have is that my uniform's still not on. I loved serving. And like I said before multiple times on the show, it was generational for me. I got to watch my dad, my granddad before me, and I'm watching other younger members of my family coming up now through the ranks. It's just to me, it is just it's an honorable form of service. That being said, I'm also struggling with what I'm seeing being done to and with the military in some aspects these days. The Biden administration, in my opinion, is clear evidence of what happens when someone is appointed to a position of leadership who has never led anything in their lives. That's what we're seeing. The current commander-in-chief has never led anything in his whole life, not once. I mean, I don't know that he ever led a Little League team, literally. And now, here we are, and he's in charge. I mean, he's had, and here's the phrase I keep using, I coined it, you can borrow it, but I coined it. It's that he had 40 years in D.C. with the luxury of rhetoric without responsibility. He was allowed to go to the podium, say whatever he wanted to, and walk away and not have to own it and not lead anything at all. And here we are. He's in charge. Well, before I jump into where troops are in harm's way right now, let me just tell you some of the things that are being said regarding the current state of our military. Heritage, it's interesting, so Noah Weinrich, who was with us a minute ago, was with Heritage Action. Heritage Foundation, from which Heritage Action sprang out of, Heritage Foundation is well known throughout the world as the most, conservative and largest think tank with an eye on national affairs in the U.S. They have been since 2015, so for 7 years now, they have been developing what they call their Index of U.S. Military Strength. Now it's pretty prolific. I printed out the executive summary. Boomer helped me prep it. I found it, sent him the link, and I was like, "Boomer, how long is this thing?" It was like, what, 12, 15 pages long?
Yeah, it was a long one.
I burned a tree on this one, bro. All right, but anyway, for the first time ever since the 7 years of this, and truly I don't know there's ever been a report like this one. For the first time ever, the U.S. military has been rated as weak relative to the force needed to defend national interests. Here's the opening statement, and then I'm going to go into what the details are. The opening statement from the 2023 Index of U.S. Military Strength by the Heritage Foundation. Quote, as currently postured, the U.S. military is at growing risk of not being able to meet the demands of defending America's vital national interests. It is rated as weak relative to the force needed to defend national interests on a global stage against actual challenges in the world, against actual challenges in the world as it is, rather than as we wish it were. This is the logical consequence of years of sustained use, underfunding, poorly defined priorities, wildly shifting security policies, exceedingly poor discipline in program execution, and a profound lack of seriousness across the national security establishment, even as threats to U.S. interests have surged. Dang. Key word in the middle of all that? Weak. Now, do I believe we have the greatest military in the face of the earth? Yes. I do. Our capabilities, our personnel, the level of training, the professionalism, far and away exceeds that of any other nation. But when you're the biggest dog on the block, there are going to be people nipping at you at all times. And you don't stay the biggest dog on the block just because you once were. You stay the biggest dog on the block because you maintain that. And you keep the ankle biters at bay, and you keep the other big dogs in their place. And in order to do that, you have to maintain a level of readiness that equates to being able to get the job done. And right now, what they're saying at Heritage is, should we face a major contingency, they don't know that we would be able to sustain operations at the level necessary. Therefore, they're listing us for the very first time as weak. Now, you might say, okay, Phil, what's this study about? Well, here's the deal. I'll read you a piece of it. Each year, it says, the Heritage Foundation's Index of U.S. Military Strength employs a standardized, consistent set of criteria accessible both to government officials and the American public to gauge the U.S. military's ability to perform its missions in today's world. The inaugural 2015 edition established a baseline, and each annual edition then builds thereafter. The index is not an assessment of what might be, although trends that it captures could imply concerns and opportunities. Rather, the index should be seen as a report card for how well or poorly conditions, countries, and the U.S. military have evolved during the assessed year. Meaning, we're not telling you how good we're going to be once those weapon systems are in place. We're not telling you how good we're going to be once we get recruiting numbers back up. We're telling you that based on where we are right now and where we've been, that it ain't where it needs to be. Now, with that being said, what does it rank? How do we come to a category of weak? I mean, this is the United States military. This is the, by God, United States military. How in the world can we be ranked weak? What are they ranking? Some of you may be out there going, oh, I don't get it, man. What are these people ranking? Well, here's the deal. Okay. First thing they do is they look at the environment. So they say they rank issues related to the ease or difficulty of operating in key regions. Most of those regions are going to be the geographic regions that we also have combatant commands that cover. Like, you know, NORTHCOM covers the United States. AFRICOM covers Africa. EUCOM. CENTCOM covers the Middle East. So take SOUTHCOM, South America and Central America. All right. So the ease or difficulty of operating in key regions. How are we doing with existing alliances? Well, the Biden administration has been struggling in the Middle East, despite the fact that we had great cooperation under the Trump administration. The Abraham Accords were in place. We had never seen the level of peace and alliance in the Middle East that we saw until, of course, the election. They also rank things like regional political stabilities. Is there unrest? Is there upheaval? Are there protests? Are we seeing civil unrest? Then they rank the presence of U.S. military forces in those regions. Do we already have a forward presence? Do we have the ability to quickly react because we currently have a posture in that region of the world? Or do we have to basically get ourselves there? All right. And then they also rank the key infrastructure in that area. What's available? Could we get there and then traverse the roads, or are we going to be in the deserts? You know, could we get there? Could we air land, or we have to go send people in to actually develop the airstrips first? All those things have to be considered. Then the next thing they consider, though, and the reason why we came out weak, is not just because of the environment and the fact that foreign policy is not going the way it should. They also rank America's military power in terms of its capability, its modernity, which means basically how current it is, how new and up-to-date are the weapon systems, our capacity for operations, and readiness. And readiness is going to include things like recruiting. All right, so what we're looking at here is, having said all of that, having looked at the operating environment in a broad spectrum, having looked at the current capabilities and capacities and readiness of our U.S. military, the Heritage Foundation came out with, for the first time ever, under the Biden administration, and ranks the U.S. military as weak. That's got to change. Because, folks, I'm telling you, we have troops in harm's way right now. And I'm going to take a phone call here in a second, which will wind up probably taking me up to the break. When I get back from that break, though, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to start going down the list and talking to you about different open source, you know, opportunities for you to see where our troops are right now in the world in harm's way. I got a call on line one, Boomer. Let me go ahead and grab that real quick for the break. Sparky. Sparky from Harvest. How you doing today, bud?
Hey, Phil and Boomer. Great. Happy Friday. Hey, I think everything's going on. Our military weakness, our completely pathetic standing of, with other nations around the world. This began with the Barack Obama regime. I used to think it was as simple as, well, Barack Obama, if you read any of his 9 or 12 autobiographies, he always felt that American exceptionalism was horrible and that the American pride needed to be knocked down a few pegs. I'm realizing it now where we stand with nations in the world. We need to be knocked down so that we can eventually become so low and useless that we become subservient to the new world government, the new world order, the Great Reset.
Oh.
This is all by design, and it's a long game, and we've got to stop these people before they destroy the greatest nation in the world.
Totally agree. I mean, you cannot look at what's happening and go, "Oh, that was accidental. They just didn't know." And I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. You know, when you're reducing funding in certain capacities, you're stretching people out for missions that don't really relate to military readiness. When recruiting is in the tank, you have to look at it and go, "How about a change of leadership, please?"
Well, you're a military combat veteran officer. I was a Army warrant officer aviator. Everything they're doing is so antithetical to how we were raised, how we executed, how we laid our lives on the line. How the average, you know, the person running that gas station or trying to run that little mercantile feels about it. I'm sure they feel just about the same way. They don't want to become a third-rate nation under some all-powerful, light blue helmet-wearing bunch of goons. I'm not
going to
have it.
No, totally right. Sparky, we're up against the break, brother. Appreciate you. As always, right. Thanks for your service too, man. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, buddy. We'll come right back. We will do this. And listen, yeah, is the U.S. military ranked weak? Yes, they are. Do we have amazing people in uniform? Yes, we do. All you green suiters out there at Redstone Arsenal, over at Anniston Army Depot, down at Maxwell Army, our Air Force Base, at Fort Rucker, I'm just telling you, we love you. We thank you. And we're going to turn this thing around. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Word to take out of there is decades, right? Like, the Biden administration is holding the bag on this, and they have more than a few faults and more than a few of their own issues that have contributed to this. But at the end of the day, this is a decades-long problem, and I think there's really three lines of issues here. One being priorities or lack thereof.
Yeah.
With the global war on terror, no war should go on decades. I mean, the drain on the country as a whole cannot really be estimated in blood or treasure, the amount that we sunk in. The fact that almost all of our armed forces, exception maybe the Navy, really retooled themselves and tailored themselves to asymmetric warfare. And now we're having to pivot back to the tune of billions of dollars is a problem. And secondly, the civ-mil gap, the civilian-military gap, and the lack of accountability for Congress and the president, because frankly, no one in the country really cares that we did this for decades. And we spent all this time breaking technology, breaking equipment, breaking people and the force. Really, like, honestly, if you're listening and you can't find Afghanistan on a map, you're part of the reason we're in the situation we're in right now. because at the end of the day, no one held Congress accountable. And so the entire military has been overstressed, overused for two decades now.
Yeah,
and then lastly, funding.
Well, hang on, before you jump off that, I mean, literally, I was looking back as you were saying that, and one of the opening lines in the quote that I read earlier was, this weak rating is, it says, the logical consequence of years of sustained use. And so I agree. I think that it goes beyond the Biden administration, although, like you said, Biden administration holds the bag because they're definitely exacerbating the problems. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, and then lastly, the third thing, we talk about funding. So funding, ultimately, the president submits his budget to Congress. For those that don't know, Congress ultimately are the purse holders. And what really kills readiness for the military as far as funding goes is continuing resolution. Because at the end of the day, you're not moving forward. You're not getting what you need for the next year that you know you need. You're getting whatever you had last year. And so inflation, you're not meeting for inflation. You're not meeting for future commitments. You're just stuck having to deal with what you've got. And you also, all of these programs that are trying to work with private industry now are causing gaps. And when they can't fund those, private industry can't make things. So you lose industrial capacity. So people get let go. And then all of a sudden you've got money as the government. Again, hey, I'm ready to build my tanks now. And they're like, sorry, we just fired 400 people because we had nothing to use to make. So continuing resolutions are another issue. But this is really a bipartisan problem. You can blame everyone from George Bush through Barack Obama, President Trump, President Biden, and every congressman and congresswoman or senator in between.
All right. Good rant. When do you run for office?
Probably 2000 never is what I'm thinking right now. We'll see.
All right. That's good stuff. Anything you want to add to it?
I think I'm good for now. I think I've been in my spleen well enough.
All right. Well, I hope this was therapeutic for you.
always is. Thank you.
All right. Good call, Josh. Appreciate you. We got the smartest audience in the world. Did you hear that stuff?
Man, he could have just kept going.
I'm just saying. I could have closed out the segment, just sat back and let him have the microphone.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Right side.
With your guest host, Josh from North Alabama. Yeah. That's good stuff. He's right, though. I hope I'm not misportraying that. I mean, I think the reality is there has been years of sustained use. I think there were aspects of Afghanistan that the extended time we were there that I believe should have been maintained. I believe that we should have maintained a forward presence, and the Bagram Airfield shouldn't have been shut down. Keep a minimal presence there, and you've got a forward operating capability right there in the very unstable region of the world. However, the way it was pulled out by the Biden administration was demoralizing to the troops. The war had to end. It had to. We can't sustain those levels of operations. We can't. We had. I remember being downrange and having. They were running short of IBCTs and ABCTs, the brigade combat teams, and they were taking artillery guys, leaving their tubes at home. They weren't even taking their cannons. All right, they weren't even taking the big guns, and they called themselves the Arfentry. Because they were out there patrolling like the infantry, which they didn't sign up to do, and so when you begin doing things like that, pivoting the entire force structure away from their MOS capability and putting them in positions that they had never planned on being in, you got to wonder. So what's going to happen when we go home? Oh yeah, then you got a readiness issue because they can't do the things to you know the proper standard that they had joined up to do, and some of them are already getting out now. It's a nut roll, but hey, we got more to go. We are back with troops in harm's way. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. The local, the state, the national, man, we are covering down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Boomer, it's hour number three.
Number three. I mean, wow.
Wow. Like, how did this happen? But anyway, I always say that.
We know how it happens.
We know it happened.
We got caught up and it went fast.
And the clock was ticking. So, yeah, that happens. But anyway, yeah, you guys, by the way, it is 4:06 p.m. That means go home time is approaching. Some of you guys are already on the road. Be careful out there rushing home for the weekend. It looks to be a beautiful weekend across the entire listening area, so good on that. Great weekend for seeing the leaves and just enjoying some time in the early fall weather. So hoping you're having a great one. Let me just suggest something to you, by the way. Before I go any further, let me just pause and say Just Love Coffee Cafe is something you might want to check out for a great fall Saturday morning. Let's say you're going to go out and you're going to go, you know, do some leaf looking and or just enjoy some time in the outdoors. But you don't want to mess the kitchen up on the way out. But you also just don't want to eat a granola bar on the way out. And you don't want the same old biscuit. Well, I'm going to suggest to you Just Love Coffee Cafe. Two locations in our listening area. One on Hughes Road out in Madison. The other on South Parkway in Huntsville. And I'm saying, man, their menu, do they have coffee? Well, of course they have coffee. It's Just Love Coffee Cafe. They got the treat coffee, as Charlene calls them, like the cappuccinos, the lattes, the espressos. And then they also have the amazing award-winning freshly ground dark roast, light roast, medium roast coffees. But then the food. Oh, my gosh, the food. So listen, you can go in there and get you a womlet. That's like a big old thick womlet filled with all kinds of stuff to include tater tots stuffed in it and cooked on a waffle iron. They got actual waffles. They've got biscuits. They've got sausage and gravy. They've got, man, I'm just telling you, check them out. They got all kinds of stuff. It might be a great Saturday morning stop. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, Hughes Road in Madison, South Parkway in Huntsville. Tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, so I'm moving forward right now with this next piece of the Triple Dipper. And I've got an email, by the way, that I've got to go to. Where is that thing? Let me see if I can find it, because it might be worth reading right now. Yeah. You know, do I get frustrated with the current state of our current military? Yes, I do. I want more for our military than what we have right now. I want people to want to be a part of the big green team. I do. And right now, recruiting is down, and morale, I believe, is down, and leadership, in my opinion, is down. And the Heritage Foundation just pointed out that they believe that we should be rated as weak by comparison to previous years and with consideration given to the current operating environment. That being said, I got a great email. So yesterday during my monologue, this is Mark from Athens. Mark, if you're listening, appreciate the email, man. I was going to reply back to you, and I thought, no, I'm going to read it out, too. So the military is a part of what we're dealing with when we look at the overall state of affairs and we want to see change at Tuesday's elections. Yesterday in my opening monologue, I quoted a line from the outlaw Josie Wales. If you've seen the movie, great movie. If you haven't seen the movie, I am questioning your manhood. But nonetheless, if you are looking for something to just sit back and enjoy this weekend, the outlaw Josie Wales, and it has more good one-liners, the kind like guys say to each other, you know, it's like the kind of thing that when you're out on the football field or when you're in the locker room or when you're just trying to tell your neighbor to buck up a little bit, quotes from the outlaw Josie Wales come across quite well. The one I quoted yesterday was right at the time in the movie when he is trying to rescue some people from the Comancheros, and Josie goes up on the hillside. The sun's at his back. He's sitting there on his horse looking just cool. And two of the people that are waiting to be rescued are down below, and one of them says to the old lady, "Hang on, Granny. Hell's coming to breakfast." I mean, what a great line. Well, I got an email after that from Mark from Athens. He says, "Mr. Williams, I want to thank you, sir, for using a great Josie Wales quote to start your show today. I want to point out, however, that an even better quote from that movie is appropriate to the current political situation we face right now." He says, "We're in a political, cultural, and I would argue spiritual war right now, and many despair that it will ever get better. When Josie Wales and his friends, women and old men, faced a huge battle against a formidable foe, he prepped them for battle with this advice." And this is a quote from the movie. He says, "Now remember, when things look bad and it looks like you're not going to make it, then you got to get mean. I mean, plumb mad dog mean, because if you lose your head and you give up, then you neither live nor win. That's just the way it is." And then Mark from Athens follows that up by saying, "Every piece of this statement is important and appropriate to today's situation. It is bad. It does look like all is lost, but we can't lose our heads and we can't give up. We got to get plumb mad dog mean and get out there and vote, rejecting the enemy who wants to destroy our country. If we don't, We neither live nor win. His final statement is most important as well. Josie said, that's just the way it is. We may wish for a more genteel time of unity and comedy, but we don't have it, and we will never unless we get plum mad dog mean right now. Love the show, sir. Keep up the good fight. Mark from Athens. And I'm just telling you, and he also, by the way, is a retired Navy supply officer. Appreciate that very much, Mark. I even showed Charlene that email last night. I thought it was apropos as I get into more of this segment on In Harm's Way. If the U.S. military is going to be ranked as weak, then you have to also look at, okay, we got our guys in difficult places right now. For instance, did you know, story off of militarytimes.com, headline, November 1st, most troops deployed for Ukraine response are still in Europe. Did you know, did you recall, and Josh from North Alabama said it a while ago in terms of the American public being aware, this is why I'm doing this, you got to be aware. These are your men and women in green, all right? Militarytimes.com, roughly 20,000 U.S. troops were mobilized throughout Central and Eastern Europe in the early months of this year, first in anticipation of a Russian invasion and then in response to it. Most of those troops are still posted in partner nations, training with local troops and otherwise assuring NATO countries that the U.S. will respond if Russia takes the fight beyond Ukraine. Here's a quote from a senior military official who remained anonymous. He said, so right now the intent is to keep troop levels at the same as they've been. We have no announcements to make in terms of any changes to that in the near term. Okay, what does that mean? What's there? Well, they brought some assets home. There were deployments of AH-64 Apache gunships, Marine Corps FA-18 Hornets, F-35 Lightning IIs, Navy EA-18 Growlers. Those have returned home. However, most is still there. So here's a breakdown, just so you have an idea. There's 125 soldiers from 5th Corps who have a main command post in Poland. We have 1,000 soldiers from the 1st Infantry Division and the 1st Infantry Division's artillery in Poland and Latvia. We have 3,200 soldiers from the 2nd Brigade Combat Team of the 101st Airborne Division in Poland and deployed otherwise around the Baltic and Black Sea area regions. We have another 3,200 soldiers from the 3rd Armored Brigade Combat Team of the 1st Cav Division. We got elements of 5th Battalion, 7th Air Defense in Poland. We got battle groups from the U.S. Army in Africa. We got 12 F-22 Raptors from the 90th Fighter Squadron. The Bush Carrier Strike Group is in the Mediterranean. All said and done, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of U.S. forces sitting over there on the borders of Ukraine and the Ukrainian conflict. Be aware. You have troops. They may not be under fire right now, but we did get a report, by the way, yesterday that for the first time, the Pentagon is acknowledging that there are U.S. forces in Ukraine right now acting as advisors and inspectors for some of the gear and weapon systems that we are sending over. There's that. And I named out the actual units. How about this one? North Korea. North Korea's suspected ICBM test fails. So the Korean Peninsula has been, you know, restive now since the days of the Korean War, all right? First, I believe, is segregated or separated North and South Korea in, I think, 1948. Of course, the early 50s is when the Korean conflict took place. And ever since then, we've had a DMZ and a difficult situation with North Korea. North Korea is a hermit kingdom, highly unpredictable, very unstable, with an economy that is propped up by foreign actors and very little productivity within. And a people that are, if you've ever read a book, if you want to read a book that gives you an idea what it must be like to live as a North Korean citizen, you need to read Escape from Camp 14. It's on the recommended reading list on the rightsideradio.org website. Escape from Camp 14. A people that have been blinded to the idea that there's more in the world than just the dear leader. Well, North Korea just launched an ICBM test. It's their largest available, most powerful ICBM. It's called the Hwasong-17. It's the one that is believed to be capable of reaching the United States mainland. It's also nuclear capable. Now, the mission was a fail. It did not go through the separation stages like it was supposed to as they launched it into the Sea of Japan. But they also, by the way, are surrounding that launch of their ICBM with dozens of missile fires for smaller missile systems. So this is all in response, by the way, to North Korea feeling like it's not getting enough attention. They're usually the actor that on the world stage that gets petulant and wants somebody to pay attention. So they do these things. Plus, they also always protest whenever the U.S. and South Korea do large-scale military exercises. Well, of course they are, and we are right now. So North Korea objected to the drills that are ongoing between the U.S. And South Korea forces. We have troops over there right now. It ramped up tensions on the Korean Peninsula. A barrage of weapon tests occurred over through the last week. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with his South Korean counterpart Lee Jong-sup at the Pentagon to discuss it. North Korea fired 3 short-range ballistic missiles into the waters off its east coast, coming very close to South Korean waters, which is the first time they've done that in 40 years. Austin later condemned North Korea's irresponsible and reckless activities during a joint press conference with Lee. When you see the defense secretaries from both nations doing a joint press conference, you know that tensions are a little bit higher than usual because they're showing solidarity to North Korea. Thursday morning's suspected ICBM was launched from the west coast of North Korea. It flew about 750 kilometers or 466 miles, fell into the Sea of Japan. It was considered to be a failed test. However, it is also considered to be their most powerful weapon, and they have had successful launches in the past. Interesting piece that I'll finish this segment with on this. Fox News reports as of yesterday that the U.S. and South Korea issued a joint warning to North Korea, warning that any use of nuclear weapons would result in what was said to be the end of Kim Jong-un's regime. In other words, it was a direct threat. It wasn't just we condemn those actions. It was saying, you fired these missiles. You take a step further, you go too far and launch nukes, and we will end your regime. That is where we have troops right now conducting military exercises with South Korea. Take me to a break, brother. We'll do that right now. Come right back. Did you know that we have a U.S. Special Operations base in Syria taking fire from Iran? I'll tell you about it. Did you know that Iran is attacking or projected to attack Saudi Arabian assets? Did you know that we've got things going on Africa, on the Horn of Africa? I'm just telling you, we got troops in harm's way. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, I got a call on the line, and I got a short segment to work with. Let me just go ahead and grab it now. Jeff, is that Jeff? Jeff from Indiana. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good, Phil.
Good. You on the road today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just past Beaver Dam, Kentucky, heading your way.
All right, man. Be careful.
You know, Phil, I hate to burst your bubble, but everything you just talked about is actually a mute point. The United States is not in danger from foreign people. The United States is in danger from within. The most dangerous person on the face of this planet right now is Joe Biden.
Oh.
In the United States.
Oh, all right. Elaborate.
They're doing more to tear this country down, and we're in a situation. I'll lay you a wager right now. But it can't be in dollars because sooner or later the dollars are going to be worth as much as Confederate money.
You're more pessimistic than usual today, Jeff.
Well, it needs to be an awakening. You know, in your monologue, you said that this is the richest country on the face of the nation. Actually, we're the poorest nation on the face of the nation. You know, name me another country that's $30 trillion dollars in debt.
Well, all right, I'll take that. $30 trillion, we could pay that off in a matter of a few years if they knuckled down and wanted to do it, but they won't.
No, and it's going to keep climbing, you know. So eventually what's going to happen is the United States is going to collapse from within. The danger is not from foreign entities. It's the danger is from idiot Americans that keep putting the same people in office and don't see that the – You know, we'll give you a trinket, and you keep voting for us and everything, and then eventually, when the nation will collapse. I mean, you know, am I the only one that can see that, or am I crazy?
Well, you know, I tell you this. If it stayed on the same track that it's on, I would say yes. If we can turn the ship around and actually put some people in office to replace some of the bad actors and no actors who have been there, I still think there's plenty of hope to right the ship of state.
Yeah, but will we? That's the trouble. You know, it's just like the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire didn't get defeated from outside forces. It collapsed from within.
That is true. I've actually done a whole segment on that once before about the actual causes that historians say caused the fall of the Roman Empire. You can find multiple of them right here in our current state.
Yeah, the people got lazy, and right now, to show something about that, you know, you got all these people out of work and all these businesses that can't find people to work. You know, why is that? You know, how are they living? You know, it's just eventually you're going to run out of somebody else's money, and it's going to mean it's not going to be a good time.
All right, I want Happy Jeff back. Where is he?
Oh. Well, Happy Jeff will be here in maybe 2024 when somebody finds out what
Happy Jeff has left the building. No, brother, go get him. Well, Jeff, I appreciate you, man, as always. And you're not wrong, except that I do believe I will contest one thing. I do believe that next week's elections and what happens in 2024 are the two most important election cycles that we're going to see in our lifetimes, in my opinion. We've got to grab the reins and grab them decisively with the ability to make the changes that we say we want to make. And then we got to have the people in there with the backbone to do it. But I think it's doable. It's just a question of getting them in there to do it.
But they have to have the guts and the willpower
to
do it. If they don't, then they're just as bad as any Democrat on the ticket.
I totally agree. I mean, look at the ability to get rid of Obamacare. John McCain hosed that one for us because he just didn't feel like giving Trump a win. Well, listen, man, we're up against the break. You be careful on the road there, brother.
Thank you, Phil. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Happy Jeff left the building.
Where, Jeff?
No, but, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know what? I think it's Leanne from Huntsville really wanted that diesel fuel segment. I'm feeling like we're staying on this in harm's way past the break. So, it looks like diesel fuel might be on Monday, bud.
We'll probably get some more articles.
Yeah. You know what? I'll stack you up with a few more. All right, folks. Y'all stay tuned. Heading into the final half hour, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, all the way over to Gadsden. We got parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, by the way, I got to tell you, you've heard me talk about the lawyers over at Riley and Jackson, right? And their work on those Camp Lejeune lawsuits. I was talking to one of them today, and he told me, They've had several Right Side Radio listeners that have called in, and they're now clients on that Camp Lejeune litigation. So good to go. Glad to hear it. That's good stuff. And as I was talking with him, he told me they're also working on another project you might want to know about. It involves firefighters and members of the military who had to use firefighting foam who have developed cancer. There's a proven link, apparently, between those who have used firefighting foam that have developed certain cancers. And so bottom line is this. There's another thing out there. That if the government has put you in a position of being exposed to harmful chemicals and you, as a result, have an insidious disease like cancer, then you may be eligible for a claim. They're working on it right now, that one and the Camp Lejeune thing. So Riley and Jackson's not going to charge you for a phone call. They'll talk to you. They'll tell you what you got. You'll get a real person. You might want to give them a call. If you or someone you know has been a firefighter or in the military and used firefighting foam and now has cancer, you should call the attorneys at Riley and Jackson. The number is 205-879-5000. That's 205-879-5000. Do me a favor, too. Tell them you heard about it here at Right Side Radio, because they're like keeping tabs and they're telling me, we got four more. So I really appreciate it. 205-879-5000, Riley and Jackson. I got to do that thing, Boomer. You going to time me, bud? All right, ready? No representation made the quality legal service before and great the quality legal service before other lawyers.
Whoa.
What was it?
2.5.
Two what?
2.5.
2.5.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I said all the words, but I think I did.
I think you did.
I think I did. All right. Hey, listen, jump back on topic now. In harm's way, let me tell you about a few that you may not have been aware of. First of all, I did just talk a minute ago about the U.S. troops that are on the borders of Ukraine and around the Baltic states and hunkered down watching closely as to what happens with the Russian war against Ukraine. And then I talked about North Korea and the heightened tensions on the Korean Peninsula and the fact that the U.S. government flat out said, if you launch nukes, this will be the end of the Kim Jong-un regime. Pretty bold rhetoric, especially when you consider they also hosted a joint press conference between the Secretaries of Defense for both nations, South Korea and the U.S. And now, let me point out a few more. These are less known. How about this one? Story on military.com. A secretive U.S. Special Operations base in Syria is taking fire from a shadowy Middle East war. Did you know, by the way, that we have U.S. troops in Syria? You may have been tangentially aware of that, but they're definitely there, and they're definitely in the thick of things. Says a remote U.S. Special Operations base in the Syrian desert is caught in a shadow war between military powers in the Middle East. It's the Al-Tanf garrison, a U.S. base typically housing between 100 and 200 U.S. troops alongside other coalition forces, has for years been a hub of operations against ISIS, as well as Iran and its proxies. In August and September of this year, the outpost was involved in a series of attacks, including a rocket attack by Iranian-backed militias that wounded three U.S. troops. Did you know that? Three U.S. troops wounded in Syria. I didn't know that. The base was established in 2016 when we were fighting in the thick of things against ISIS. In recent months, though, Al-Tanf has become a focal point in a shadowy conflict between all the region's key players, Israel, the U.S., Russia, Iran. Israel regularly strikes Iranian-backed forces in Syria. They do. They do airstrikes constantly. Flying over Al-Tanf allows the Israeli aircraft to kind of limit their exposure to Syrian air defenses. So one U.S. official says they like to use our air corridors because Syria's air defenses can't tell the difference until it's too late. But allowing Israel and occasionally Jordan to operate around Al-Tanf has exposed the U.S. to retaliatory attacks from Iran. Basically what's happening is it pisses Iran off. And so they decided to start striking at the base. Three U.S. soldiers already wounded. The base was hit by what was believed to be an Iranian-launched drone strike on August 15th. There is the risk that Russia, on the ground in Syria, could be worried about the perception that it's focused solely on Ukraine. In that case, you might see more erratic Russian behavior. We have troops in harm's way. Here's one more story, kind of separate from that, that you just need to know is part of the same region. So here we have a special operations base in Syria, where three U.S. soldiers were wounded in a Iranian-backed drone strike. We also have a report from The Hill that came out 3 days ago. U.S. warned of Iranian attacks on targets in Saudi Arabia and Iraq. Okay, we're not in Iraq. Yes, we are. What do you mean? Well, we still have troops there in a minor capacity to train, advise, and protect, all right? We do. It says here, Saudi Arabia has warned the United States of an imminent Iranian attack on targets in the kingdom, in the Saudi kingdom, and in Iraq, with the U.S. military now on heightened alert. Riyadh shared intelligence with Washington indicating the elevated danger causing Saudi Arabia, the U.S., and other neighboring countries to raise the alert level for their military forces. Brigadier General Pat Ryder, who is the Pentagon's press secretary, he said, we reserve the right to protect and defend ourselves no matter where our forces are serving, whether in Iraq or elsewhere. We have troops in a place called Erbil in northern Iraq. Like I said, they're there to train, advise, protect against attacks from Iranian-backed fighters. the intelligence from Saudi Arabia indicates that Iran, not a proxy, but Iran itself, may be intent upon launching drone strikes against the base in Erbil where U.S. troops are, as well as facilities where U.S. forces are in Saudi Arabia. Be aware, too, we shot down one of their drones that was launched towards Erbil earlier this year. Nothing new, apparently. It's just ramping up. How about this? Africa. Secret U.S. talks fail. A hidden war in Africa rapidly escalates. And yes, we have troops in the Combined Joint Task Force, Horn of Africa, in Djibouti. Nairobi, Kenya, it says. Story from the New York Times, dated October 9th. So we're right at not quite a month ago. As fighting flared in northern Ethiopia last month, shattering a five-month truce and reigniting a destructive civil war, a small United States military aircraft carried senior American diplomats across the front lines on a secret mission to try and halt the bloodshed. It did not work. The jet traveled to Tigray, the besieged northern region that has been at war with the Ethiopian government. Tigray is the world's unseen war, it says, a sprawling conflict hidden behind a punishing government siege that has severed communications in the region, locked out reporters, and left 5.2 million people in urgent need of food aid, according to the United Nations. UN investigators call the entire place a war crime. But in recent weeks, the fighting has surged to its most intense level yet, and the secret efforts at peace have given way to a raging combat that many fear could quickly expand across the Horn of Africa. And like I said, we have forces in the Horn of Africa. While the world's gaze is largely fixed on Ukraine, the conflict in Tigray is also huge, with three major armed forces, including two of Africa's largest armies, Ethiopia and Eritrea, battling on multiple fronts. The latest fighting features pitch battles, drone strikes, artillery barrages, has pulled in neighboring countries, and involves hundreds of thousands of combatants by most estimates. At least 100 civilians have died. As many as 500,000 have fled their homes in an area that is, the fighting is going on in an area that is very rugged and about twice the size of Switzerland. That's happening in Africa. And yes, we have folks, troops in the Horn. And then lastly, I'll say this. The war on terror, according to Reason.com. Headline, the war on terror continues apace in Africa. Storyline dated September 2nd. After waves of U.S. airstrikes against jihadist groups in the Horn of Africa. Oh, see, we're actually doing things in the Horn of Africa. We're not just sitting there. After waves of U.S. airstrikes against jihadist groups in the Horn of Africa this summer, U.S. officials have made their way to Mogadishu to show their support for Somalia. Lieutenant General Michael Langley, the newly appointed commander of U.S. Africa Command, went to Mogadishu back in September himself. Back in May, it says the Biden administration announced that 500 U.S. soldiers would return to Somalia as a small, persistent military presence. Not only do we have, Camp Lemonnier, which is the CJTF HOA, Horn of Africa facility, but now we sent 500 more troops there at a time when the conflicts in that part of the country are getting more difficult. It says the redeployment of troops in these recent airstrikes represents the latest episode in a 15-year U.S. intervention in Somalia done entirely without congressional approval. It references the Battle of Mogadishu in 1993. Mike Durant shot down the Black Hawk helicopters. It says the Bush administration returned to Somalia in 2007 as part of the global war on terror. And I know because I have friends that were stationed there. Four Green Berets were killed in an ambush in Niger in 2017, which caused many prominent lawmakers, to include Senator Lindsey Graham, to be surprised because they didn't know they even had 1,000 troops in Niger. And we did. And we still have troops in that area now. All I'm saying is this, folks. These are your folks. These are your people. These are your men and women. These are your troops that are in harm's way. Make no mistake. They are in difficult places right now doing difficult things, and they need every bit of our attention. Don't think for a minute that because we're not fighting on the front in Ukraine that we're not nearby and we couldn't be drawn in, all right? Don't think it for a second. Don't think for a second that while the Korean Peninsula has been, you know, restive but not at war for 50 years, that it couldn't happen in a flash because we have an unstable man occupying a seat in an unstable government with nuclear weapons. Don't think for a second that what's happening in Niger between, different forces in Africa that seem so remote that we can't think about it, or the war, the ongoing fighting with Eritrea and Ethiopia, somehow we're removed from that. We have 500 troops that were just sent over recent months, and we have 4 Green Berets that were killed just a few years ago. Don't think it for a second. It's a dangerous world, and anybody who's serving in the military right now has the opportunity to be there. And we appreciate you. All of you folks that are currently active, you veterans, those of you that are in the defense industry, thank you for your service. We appreciate you more than you can possibly know. This show will always call attention to the efforts made by those in uniform, and pray that we have the right kind of leadership and funding and support. But yeah, troops in harm's way. Stay attention. Pay attention. All right, Boomer, take us to a break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back. Wrap it up for the week, because it's Friday. All right, we'll be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio.